Today is apparently National Police Day. I don't know the significance of that, but there we go. For what it's worth, not very much at all, today is National Police Day. So perhaps it's an appropriate time to talk to Dr. Guy Lam about lockdown policing. Guy is a criminologist in the Department of Political Sciences at Stellenbosch University. Guy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John.
Your op-ed on News 24 today, Lockdown Policing is Not Lacquer. Did you choose that title?
I mean, yes, I did.
Yeah, okay.
I did.
And we all know examples of lockdown policing which are far from lacquer. But I do wonder, because I do try to see the other side, whether there's quite a lot of quite sensible lockdown policing happening which we don't know about, because who talks about things when they're working well?
Absolutely. I mean, the selection of the title of the article was that it's not lacquer, and sometimes it's not lacquer for the police themselves. Because, I mean, the situation you have here is, you know, police is a professional body that kind of has a range of professional duties that are quite specialized, and their job is to prevent crime, combat crime, and, you know, what lockdown is required of them is them to do fairly petty things. We're seeing situations where many police are performing these lockdown duties and performing them professionally and performing them with compassion and understanding and using their discretion in that regard. But unfortunately, what we often see in the media is police who are not doing that, who are using kind of very heavy-handed approaches to enforce the lockdown regulations without any flexibility.
What right do I have as a citizen, or how would you regard my view as a citizen? I think that the beach lockdown regulations are ridiculous, and they are even more ridiculous now. Having talked to Francois Fenter yesterday, where he stressed again how absolutely remote the infection is in the open air, that all of the evidence suggests indoor transmission takes care of well over 99% of global transmissions. What right do I have as a citizen to say don't police people going on to the beaches because the law which says they mustn't is a ridiculous law?
Well, I mean, it's within the regulations and it's been, you know, promulgated by the minister. So effectively it is, you know, a requirement that you have to adhere to it. Well, the logical aspects of that, of course, we can question it. From a government's point of view, is that your mechanisms and tools to try and enforce lockdown are very blunt. And you're trying to, you know, prevent people from gathering, and it's based on an assumption that people will gather in large numbers, not adhere to social distancing in the context of a beach, consume alcohol. And that's the basis of that. But it's the nature of South African beaches in many cities is that the risk of infection is very low. But what it's done is requiring the police to police that is that, you know, it's kind of created all these unfortunate incidences where police have to enforce these lockdowns in places where you've got individuals surfing or someone walking along the beach and there's no risk whatsoever to them passing on the virus if they are infected.
Guy, if you were the sector commander of a police area which had beach front as part of it, would you direct your officers to patrol occasionally and take action, or would you say, come on guys, there are more important things to do?
Well, let me give you some examples before I answer your question.
Yeah.
So there are a number of coastal communities where the police have taken the regulations and the instructions from the minister to be absolute in the enforcement of the regulations. There will be no one on the beaches, and they've taken that particular approach. We've seen a particular incident in Cape St. Francis and Francis Bay where police allegedly actually threw stun grenades at surfers in the water, for example. And we've seen arrests of kite boarders and these kind of cases.
Yeah,
a couple of surfers out of the water, and then there were allegedly kind of stun grenades that were thrown at them. So, but I mean, these kind of, there have been a number of cases, for example, up on the West Coast in smaller communities where the station commander has gone, listen, this is, you know, there's no risk here. I have better things to do with my time. You surfers, you're on your own, but obviously if it becomes out of hand, I will deal with you. Or if there's, you know, people congregating on the beaches, the police respond. So it really does vary from station commander to station commander. So the more reasonable ones, you know, in low kind of, you know, low risk kind of communities have taken a fairly laissez-faire approach to it. But I think some of them are already concerned if social media picks up on them doing this or their reports and it gets through to the ministry that there will be, or even to, you know, head office in Pretoria, that there will be a fairly kind of stern response from those particular individuals and leaders in those places. But to answer your question, what if I was a station commander, if I was an experienced policeman and was confident that, that there wouldn't be consequences for my actions, I would certainly, if there was low risk, you know, sort of have a play-by-ear approach to it, and if everyone's behaving themselves, then I wouldn't have a problem. But if people started to party and not observe social distances, then obviously you would have to intervene as a police.
Yeah, I suspect that there are police officers who delight in the kind of not lack of policing which you describe in your op-ed, because that's just the nature of who they are, and they love throwing their weight around, and they quite enjoy the kind of argy-bargy as part of it. But then there must be other police officers who go, why am I being asked to do this? Why, this is, they must feel equally as I do as a non-police officer, that some of the things that they're asked to police are not worth policing, and that they've got better things to do, and yet they maybe have a station commander who's more in the gung-ho style. And so, it's just awful for everybody that this has to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's about their frustrations at many levels. I mean, the one level of frustration, I think, is for those policemen who are very serious about their job and join the police because it's a calling and they want to make a difference and they want to reduce crime, and having to devote their time to, you know, enforcing mask wearing, for example, can be very frustrating. But I think one of the kind of keys, there are those who do, you know, the few who get enjoyment out of using violence and seeing people comply, but it's also leading to police getting very frustrated that people aren't complying, because it's, you know, many of these circumstances you're getting police saying, listen, people are just not listening to us. So they only listen to us when we use forceful tactics. So, and then that is endorsed by what's coming out of the Ministry for Police, for example. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't think that surfer disobedience and arrogant and really unpleasant surfer disobedience ever justifies stun grenades being thrown at them when in the water.
No, but do we know
what happened, what the series of interactions was which led to the police taking the regrettable decision to throw stun grenades at surfers? I mean, you know, if the police were there and sort of gesturing, come guys in, and the surfer showed them middle finger and they got a loud holler and said, what you're doing is against the law, please come in, we don't want to have to act against you, but you do need to come out of the waves, and, you know, the surfers, get yourself a surfboard and come and fetch me, no way I'm coming in. That probably is part of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, there is the kind of, when you're getting the sort of, you know, response from people you're asking to comply or ordering to comply, and that's within the regulations. If you disobey an order, then you're committing a crime. So it kind of all adds into these particular issues. But when people are being, you know, disrespectful towards you, it does lead to this kind of escalation. But the escalation then leads to problematic and illegal behavior. So, for example, the use of stun grenades in a non-public order policing context is against policing regulations. So another kind of case of, you know, launching stun grenades at surfers in the water is completely inappropriate and goes against policing regulations. But, you know, the same things around, I mean, what we saw with pensioners queuing outside the DSD offices in Belleville, for example, where the police resorted to using water cannons. And, I mean, you know, how inappropriate is that? Where obviously people aren't wanting to disperse because of, you know, very obvious reasons that they're, you know, they're desperate, they're having problems with their grant, they're looking for additional support from DSD, and if they leave, they're not going to get that support, and then the police respond by using water cannon to try and disperse them. So that's highly inappropriate.
Okay. And, I mean, with a police minister like Becky Cele, who doesn't appear to understand that his role is not to direct the operations of the police, but to establish the policing framework and the theory of policing, which then needs to be operationalized by Ketla Sithole and down the organogram. It's unlikely that there's going to be a push within a generalized educational push within the police to try and maximize lacquer policing and minimize not lacquer policing.
It's you know, that's a kind of tricky one to respond. So I think the minister, he's committed to reducing crime, and, you know, he's committed to kind of making South Africa a safer place. I think it's very much around the approach to it. And, you know, he is his kind of the sort of approach that he's taken towards, and he's not the first to do it. He just does it in a lot more flamboyant way, is around how do you get compliance from the local population in terms of, you know, not...
Grab them by the balls and their hearts will follow. They'll follow. That's his approach.
It was a comment that was made to me once by a policeman I asked about, for example, firearms control, and the response was, you know, the use of fear factor is that you have to create a sort of a sense of that there will be very serious consequences, either immediately or further down the line in terms of the criminal record, that if you do not behave in a certain way or comply, that there will be these kind of consequences. And unfortunately, that's been the kind of dominant leadership discourse for the SAS for many, many years. Even though they want, you know, communities to be in partnership with them to solve problems with the community level, but when you treat people in particular ways, and this usually happens in the high crime areas, you know, in these heavy-handed ways, the community is not going to work with you to solve the problems. And I think that's the key issue here.
Dr. Guy Lamb, thanks for talking to us this afternoon, a criminologist with the Department of Political Sciences at Stellenbosch University.